everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 110. That's 110. Sorry. I don't know why that got me so bad. Chance Watson and Molly Roberts coming at you with the news today. This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing coal producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They're the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. I don't know why. The only thing that I was thinking, I was going to call you Molly Ringwald.
Ooh, I'll take it.
Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Breakfast Club, pretty in pink.
There you go. Oh, Molly, do you got the 80 movies down?
Oh, I was a huge John Hughes fan.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. In fact, I want to bring my Breakfast. I think I'm going to bring my Breakfast Club poster in here to put in the office.
That's a really good idea, mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. Speaking of 80s movies and how relatable they are, sounds like we got Red Dawn on the horizon.
Not the bad remake with Josh Peck. This is real life.
This one might be a little more real. Shout out to, well, we don't have any Ukrainian listeners that we just looked on the stats, but know anybody mm-hmm. that's in Ukraine right now, give them a shout out. They're dealing with some stuff right now. Did you have Russia invades Ukraine on your Armageddon bingo card, Molly?
2022 Armageddon bingo. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I probably should have, but I did not.
I think the smart money I thought was China invades Taiwan.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was not expecting that.
No.
Well, I don't know, whatever. I mean, hopefully it's not going to get any worse. We're into two months into 2022?
Oh my gosh, we are almost at the end of February of 2022, feels like it's been 5 years already.
Nobody light anything on fire.
No, just everyone, let's just all take a collective deep breath.
Leave all the gorillas alone.
Okay, I think we're, oh my gosh.
I feel like all this started with that. That kicked everything off.
That truly did. When was it Harambe?
Harambe.
When
yep.
poor Harambe was killed, everything started to go downhill.
I think that was it.
Yep. Yeah. That makes sense to me because that poor gorilla, he should, well, yeah.
Justice for him.
Yeah. We will not say the popular hashtag that went around.
No,
but
let's,
if
not,
you know,
let's not do that.
If you know what the popular hashtag is, then...
This is a semi-family show.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a PG-13. This is a movie that you have to... Parental suggestion is...
Yeah, maybe...
Not required, but... Advised.
Yeah. Right. We are two adults who.
on a scale of Tarzan to Friday the 13th, this is like a B level action movie.
Okay. I was like, wait, what are we?
This is like people in this action movie, people get killed, but usually it's like they're like pushed off a cliff and you don't see it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there's no gore. Yeah, people are dying, but there's no gore.
Star Wars level
Ooh,
violence.
Ooh, okay.
That is good. Have you ever watched any of the animated stuff? Like, it's obviously made for kids, so like,
mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yes.
But like, there are so many people that fall off of things.
Uh-huh.
Like,
but
a
that's
lot.
Just how they die. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Especially for a show where like one of the main weapons is literally a sword that cuts things in half.
Right. That is very true. That in a lot of like kids movies and stuff, that's how a lot of deaths happen.
A lot of people fall off of things.
Yeah, because you don't see the
end result of it.
Interesting. All right.
It's just kind of skirted around.
It is. It's like, wait, what happened to them? And then the parents just have to answer like, oh boy, great. Thank you, Disney. Now I get
learned,
to explain
He learned
why
the error
Mufasa
of his ways
died.
And went on to open a shoe store.
Yeah. Mufasa is fine, everyone.
Right. Of course. But those old Disney movies, though, oof. Like they did flirt with... Like, in some ways, worse versions of death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, I mean, some, like, Pocahontas, or not Pocahontas, Fox and...
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, Bambi.
Yeah, those, I can't even think of them. I'm going to start weeping already just thinking about Fox and the Hound, Bambi. Yep. That is, well, yeah, yeah.
It's not great.
It's not great, but it does, I suppose, help kids learn empathy, learn to...
Slowly eases them into, like, the realities of the world.
Exactly.
You know what? Speaking of the realities of the world, I haven't watched it, but apparently on my Facebook feed, Arthur had its finale.
I saw a few things about that.
And we got to see, like, what they do now as adults.
Mm-hmm. The only one that I saw... was that DW becomes a policewoman. Yes.
DW is a cop, which makes sense.
Which it does make sense.
Totally makes sense. It was going to go one way or the other, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, she was either going to be a cop or being chased by the cops.
Chased by the cop, exactly.
But it's a kid's show, so we can't do that.
Yes.
Arthur becomes like a graphic novelist or something.
Okay.
Which is very strange, but okay.
Sure.
Yeah. That was a little weird.
Yeah, a little weird.
Oh, I can't remember the other ones. One of them's Buster. A real estate agent. Buster, what does he do? Can't remember.
Hmm.
I wish I could remember their names.
I know. Oh my gosh. I used to be obsessed with Arthur
as a
kid, obviously.
It's a big show.
It was a big show. Mm-hmm. Francine. There's Francine.
Yeah, Francine. I think she becomes a real estate agent or something.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Muffy.
Muffy's a real estate agent. Yeah, that's it.
Muffy's a real estate
that's
agent.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a good show.
It really was.
I was a big fan of Arthur.
A very good show. Arthur, I loved the musical episodes that they would do.
There was musicals?
There were musical episodes.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. We had the Arthur CD with Crazy Bus on it.
Wow.
Crazy Bus.
What was the first CD you ever had?
I believe either... Genie in a Bottle, Christina Aguilera, or Britney Spears, Hit Me Baby One More Time. Yeah, it was those two.
Yep.
Or Billy Joel with Uptown Girl.
Oh.
So a little bit, yeah, it was, because I remember, showing my friends, oh, look, I got these new CDs, let's listen to them. And instead of choosing Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears, I chose Billy Joel. And I was like, guys, listen, this is amazing.
I just watched the New Girl episode recently, where he's like, just like Billy Joel, don't say it, I'm moving out, you're the worst. You're the worst.
Don't say it.
No, don't do it. First CDs of mine had to be the that maroon-covered Queen Greatest Hits album.
Ooh.
Right off the top was We Will Rock You,
yeah.
We're the Champions, and another one Bites the Dust.
Yes.
Quickly followed by Britney Spears' Hit Me One More Time.
Oh my gosh.
Great. I jammed out to that CD.
We will have to karaoke sometime and do some Britney Spears.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then actually quickly followed by the Shrek soundtrack.
Ooh, yes. With the shape of a nail on her forehead.
That is Shrek still relevant today.
Oh, yes, he is.
Very much so. I've heard that Mike Myers, like, because he's kind of had like some downtime recently. He hasn't done too much. I've heard rumors that Austin Powers is going to come back.
Oh my gosh.
I would be okay with that. Were you an Austin Powers fan?
You know, I'd be okay with it. Yeah. I mean, I was not pretty big Austin Powers fan, but yeah, I enjoyed watching them. Definitely.
Oh, they're fantastic movies.
He's a very, very talented individual.
I mean, he is most of the characters in the
Austin
Powers movies.
And he created such, like, I don't know, just such great characters that, yeah, exactly. Those are still quoted today.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just $1 million is still quoted today. Laser. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was. And the one time that Seth Rogen? No.
Seth?
Green.
Seth Green.
One of his only, like, major roles on television. Usually he's just doing the voices for, like, Robot Chicken and that kind of thing. Which, you know, whatever. It's fine. I liked him on that 70s show.
I liked him on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
He was a werewolf.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And he dated Willow. Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to be honest, though. I watched more Xena Warrior Princess than I did Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, then you did Buffy? Mm.
Not that I didn't like Buffy. Right. I just, I was more, I think it was because I watched the Hercules show.
And then always and then it transferred Xena followed. Into Xena, oh, yeah, definitely.
Which, I mean, what a great combo. In fact, they need, they need to, like, now, since we're in the age of rebooting everything, like, have Xena, like, come, that needs to be a
oh,
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in fact, you know, we're in the age now where we are, like, making, like, the strongest woman characters possible.
Right.
Xena's a perfect fit for this. Come on.
Exactly.
That's such a good show. I loved it so much. It was so good.
It really was.
It was. Okay.
Lucy Lawless. Whew.
Oh, yes.
Woo-wee.
Mm-hmm. She is a very attractive individual.
Yeah, still gorgeous when she showed up in Parks and Rec as Ron Swanson's girlfriend.
Woohoo! Mm-hmm. Oh, Tammy? Mm, oh, no, not Tammy.
No.
No.
Not any of the Tammys. No, she was a good girlfriend.
Yes, that's right.
She was
right.
the best one at the end.
Yes,
yeah.
the one at the end that gets along with, yeah.
Yes.
She is definitely, that's funny. I didn't even make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
That's right.
Mind blown.
It is Lucy Lawless.
Speaking of, you see we have the Pyramid
of Greatness. I definitely did. The Swanson Pyramid of Greatness.
That hangs in the Shoshone studio here.
Top
over here.
Is honor.
Honor, yep. America, weapons, woodworking. I wonder.
That is pretty great.
Like, who put the time, like the writers, like put so much time into creating this for like one episode.
Uh-huh.
Like one cold open.
Exactly.
Of one episode.
That is and so funny.
Oh, the work that the people put into things. All right, let's move into the news. But first,
Friday.
Initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery today if you're crazy and try a staff favorite that is back on tap, the 6.6% 80 IBU Crossfire Citra IPA. This comes with a side of hops that you can chew. Just kidding. Hop drinkers. Okay. This light body beer is an easy to drink IPA with a crisp citrus flavor and aroma. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursday, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide variety of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing. Recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho, and caters to IPA lovers.
Still, we're bringing it back.
Yeah,
IPA lovers, you know what?
until that beer changes.
We might still, yeah. Oh,
it's a love-hate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you love craft beer. I appreciate that very much so.
Yeah.
It's your tastes in beer are interesting.
You are interesting. Which I'm sure they'd probably say the same about us, maybe, I guess.
Molly, as somebody who moonlights
at a brewery.
At a brewery. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
I don't understand IPAs. I don't enjoy them. I'm sorry. They are very popular, obviously. But
I don't think less of you.
I do not think less of you for drinking an IPA. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that someone likes them.
Yeah.
Give me a Scotch ale, though.
Mm-hmm.
Woo-hoo, and I'll be happy.
Yes.
A smooth Scotch ale.
Oh, could not agree more. Could not agree more. Okay, now that we're on the same page on beer.
Yes.
Moving on to Courtland and Post Falls Press headlines. Wednesday, February 23rd, headline, Neighborhood Watch Resurrected. This is by Bill Bewley. Cora Powers called Los Angeles home for about 25 years. In doing so, she said she became well familiar with neighborhood crimes. Since she moved to Fernand Hill and Coeur d'Alene more than a decade ago, she knows a bit about a peaceful community. She prefers the latter. I would hope so. And she supports what helps it stay serene. Quote, I greatly value our neighborhood watch, she said. Powers is co-captain of a neighborhood watch that has 120 homes on its roster. It's a role that she stepped into 3 years ago and is proud to hold. Quote, we really saw the tremendous value it provided to the community, she said.
In a nutshell, they pay attention to what's going on in the neighborhood, to what may be suspicious activity. That could be an unfamiliar car cruising around, people coming and going from a home at all hours, or a neighborhood dog barking like something's up. And that's the obvious, a prowler outside a home or car. All of it takes as is an email blast or takes with text within minutes. Homes up and down blocks can be on alert. Quote, "We really do watch out for each other," Powers said. The city of Coeur d'Alene is looking to reignite its neighborhood watch program after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus. It has a handful of active ones, but hopes to add more because of its effective at reducing crime, said Sergeant Jared Renault. Perhaps most importantly, it builds a bond between police and citizens. Quote, "The biggest assets and the biggest asset that we have in the police department is the relationship and the trust we have with the citizens of Coeur d'Alene," Renault said. "We're so fortunate here that we don't have a lot of the issues that they have in the big cities. We have a very supportive community." Renault said the goal with Neighborhood Watch is to connect neighbors who establish a line of communication, usually emails or texts. There could be just a few homes involved to more than 100. The idea remains the same. Be alert to what's happening outside your home and around the area. Quote, "They recognize who's supposed to be there and who's not," Renault said. "And when it's suspicious to them, they're able to contact us right away." Crime is often connected to drug activity, Renault said, and that moves to different points around the city, so no area is immune. It opens communication lines and builds a bond among residents who might not otherwise meet. Quote, "If it lasts long enough, they do eventually gain that trust, where they really know their neighbors," Renault said. Terry Heinrich, a crime prevention specialist with the police, said watch captains generally have a meeting among those participating. They take part in the National Night Out in August, which unites people and police for a celebration. Quote, "It only takes one tiny spark to create enthusiasm and interest," she said. "And if you put it out there and we show up and we support whatever you're doing, then that creates enthusiasm and spark. And that's what we want. We want our community to stay this wonderful, caring community." Watch captains undergo background checks. Quote, "We don't want a criminal becoming a neighborhood watch captain," Heinrich said, laughing. "To be clear, it's not about turning ordinary people into would-be police officers. It's not about Joe Citizen on patrol, following someone they think is shady, confronting people, collecting evidence as a wannabe police officer. That is, in fact, discouraged. It's about neighborhoods looking after each other and being the eyes and ears for the police." Unless you need a hero, that one that you don't necessarily want, but the one you need.
The night rises.
A dark night. A watchful protector.
Yeah, unless you want to be a vigilante.
Unless, right. I mean, if your superpower is money, then, I mean, I guess that's okay, right?
That's okay. Yeah, if you have enough money to make yourself a really dope suit, get yourself a Batmobile, then, okay.
We've got enough billion and trillionaires in the world. Like, why isn't one of them become
so
a superhero
true.
Yet?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk should...
Buddy.
Like, right. I remember, like, either he's going to be Batman or just become a supervillain.
Either one, I'll watch and I'll be entertained by it.
That would be fantastic. But no, I feel like there's enough people there that have enough money that their superpower
should be that. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like it should happen. Somebody needs to make that happen.
I agree. If I become a billionaire or millionaire, mm-hmm. that is immediately what I would do.
Absolutely.
I do not care about paying off any debts. I will just immediately go to superhero.
You know.
Thank you.
when heroes, like when a male hero gets in there, like he's got that hero voice. But now that I'm thinking about it, like female superheroes, they just like use their normal voice.
They just use their, yeah. There's no, hello.
No, that you can do that. You're like, look at,
it
you're like.
It would be very confused.
You're looking at Wonder Woman and she's like, hi.
Hi.
You're like, ah.
The night rises.
Tell me the truth.
My name is Martha.
Oh boy. All right. Moving on to Thursday.
Maybe she goes in with like a Legally Blonde voice.
There we go.
Stop that.
Cut it. Oh my God. Cut it out. Are you kidding me right now? Joker, back up. As if.
She goes off and she just starts talking crap about him.
Okay, I kind of love that. A Valley Girl superhero.
Valley Girl superhero.
Okay, I'm loving that.
Okay, somebody needs to work this up now.
We need millionaires and multimillionaire billionaires mm-hmm. to be vigilantes, and then we also need a Valley Girl superhero.
Her catchphrase will be as if.
As if? What Ev.
In fact, she'll talk in like 90s catchphrases.
Ooh, yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like up your butt and around the corner. Like that would be like her insult.
Don't have a cow.
I love this so much.
Yeah, okay. Like, okay. If I could draw, I would be on it, unfortunately.
Well, isn't Captain Marvel supposed to be a 90s superhero?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. She's not a Valley girl, though.
She needs to embrace the
90s. She does.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move into Thursday. Next on, we have Hayden Mayer Resigns by Kay Thornbrough.
So, and before we go into this, we will have an interview with the former mayor at the end of the Coeur d'Alene headlines, but this will give you good context for that.
All right. Hayden Mayer Steve Griffiths will step down next week, citing the actions of two new city council members. Griffiths, who was elected to second term in 2019, is resigning effective March 1st. It's a step I don't take lightly, and I didn't anticipate taking, he told the press on Wednesday. He announced his resignation after a city council meeting Tuesday night, where he said new council members Ed DePriest and Sandra White are exposing the city to unnecessary litigation by refusing to accept legal advice. DePriest and White were elected last November, defeating longtime council members Dick Panabaker and Jerry DeLange. White and DePriest began their four-year terms last month. Griffiths described the meeting as, quote, the straw that broke the camel's back, end quote. Quote, to disregard numerous legal directions, knowing it would put the city at legal risk, was something I didn't see getting fixed through normal mentoring channels, Griffiths said. I'm terrified for the citizens of Hayden over the legal exposure we now have, end quote. Councilman Roger Satterfield said he's disappointed by Griffith's decision to resign, though he understands the reasoning. Hayden City Administrator Brett Boyer said that the council can hold a special meeting to appoint an interim mayor at any time after March 1st. The appointee will hold the office until the next election. The council could appoint one of their own or someone else entirely. DePriest said he objects to how Griffiths framed Tuesday's events, as well as some events that preceded the city council meetings. Quote, Griffiths is putting the message out to people of Hayden that their newly elected councilpersons have put them at risk of a lawsuit, DePriest said. That is at the very least misleading and, to some degree, incendiary, end quote. The conflict stemmed from a zone map amendment request from Aspen Homes, a custom home builder based in Coeur d'Alene. The request is for the parcel at 9519 North Ramsey Road to change from commercial to mixed use. The city's future land use map already designates the parcel as mixed use. The city council previously denied the request. Aspen Homes then submitted a request for another public hearing, which the city council considered at Tuesday's meeting. City attorneys previously advised DePriest to recuse himself from the matter on the grounds that there is a legal basis for conflict of interest. In October 2021, before the Aspen Homes request went out for public comment, DePriest said that the Hayden Planning and Zoning Commission indicated that no such requests were in the pipeline. 2 days later, DePriest said he noticed an upcoming hearing for the Aspen Homes request. DePriest sent what he described as a sarcastic email on October 16th to the City Council Mayor and Planning and Zoning Commission with the subject line, Mixed Use Zone Change Request. The email reads in part, quote, what an amazing coincidence. Last Tuesday, the zone text is approved, and the city has been emphasizing that not one property is mixed use, and shazam, just coincidentally, a zone change request to mixed use. All ready to go, with the T's crossed and the I's dotted. DePriest did not refer to any specific applicant by name, though the email reportedly contained attachments showing images related to the Aspen Homes application. Quote, I didn't care who it was about, DePriest said. I felt we were being misled, end quote. Because the Aspen Homes request was the only zone change application out for public comment at that time, the commission attached it to the application. City Attorney Fonda Jovic noted that White and DePriest were well within their rights as private citizens to submit comments on the application. Now they're acting in a quasi-judicial role, which Jovic says requires a heightened scrutiny for potential bias. She said applicants have two options when governing body's decision doesn't go their way. They can ask the district court to conduct a takings analysis,
A regulatory taking occurs when governmental regulation is so burdensome and restrictive that it reduces the use or value of a property. Applicants can also petition for judicial review. If granted, a court would evaluate whether there were any procedural deficiencies in the process. Neither action is technically a lawsuit, Jovic said. DePriest said Wednesday that he doesn't believe his actions so far could expose the city to litigation, though he acknowledged the October email appeared biased. Quote, if it comes to a hearing, I will recuse myself, DePriest said, emphasizing that Tuesday's discussion was not a hearing. Rather, the council considered a request from Aspen Homes for another public hearing. DePriest moved to approve the request. Council President Matthew Roeder seconded the motion, and it passed unanimously.
Okay, well, that's going to be, that'll be, we'll leave the discussion up for when we have that interview later on. Moving on, we are at a critical point. This is by Bill Buehling. Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris made his case Wednesday night that the city of Hayden needs to invest more money in law enforcement. Boy, Hayden is just under the spotlight in this episode. Quote, we are at a critical point, he told about 75 people at the Office of Emergency Management during the 70-minute meeting. The KCSO called the town hall meeting following a February 6 incident in Hayden that involved hostages, a fire, and a standoff. When it was over, Kenneth T. Wilson, 59, of Spokane, was arrested and charged with three counts of aggravated assault and with unlawful possession of a firearm, both felonies. He's being held at the Kootenai County Jail on a $500,000 bail. Wilson also was cited for obstruction, false imprisonment, and animal cruelty, all misdemeanors. Wilson had a previous record that included convictions of numerous felonies in Washington, including attempted rape in 1994, as well as a failure to register as a sex offender in 2002, 2004, and 2005.
Oh, my gosh.
He was also previously convicted of possession of a controlled substance in 2008 with false imprisonment and assault in 2017.
Oof.
Sounds like a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Quote, this was not a good person that came to live in our community, Norris said. The incident left many people shaken. He said a community-based policing model would have raised the likelihood that KCSO would have known about Wilson, checked on him, and prevented the incident. Quote, our odds would have been increased, Norris said. He said deputies needed time to establish relationships throughout Hayden, which helped prevent crime, rather than going from call to call taking reports. He called for proactive law enforcement. Quote, don't wait until this gets out of control, he said. The crowd broke into groups following the outline of what happened on the 800 block of D Court and shared concerns with KCSO personnel. Many asked what staffing levels of KCSO needed to properly propel police in Hayden and what that would cost. Undersheriff Dan Matos said KCSO has a total of just over 50 patrol deputies, about 15 detectives, and an annual budget of about $35 million, which isn't enough to cover about 1,300 square miles between Bonner and Benoit counties. Much of its budget goes to operating the jail, which on Wednesday had nearly 400 inmates. Quote, not only are we being disproportionately centered on serving Hayden at the expense of others, we're already in the hole, Matos said. About 20 years ago, Hayden's population was about 3,000, and it could be covered by a few deputies. Today, it has 17,000 people, and KCSO is budgeted for 3.5 deputies there, far from what is needed, Matos said. 17,000. There's more people in Hayden than there is entirety of Shoshone County.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. Norris said Hayden spends about 6% of its budget on law enforcement in its contract with KCSO, while most cities spend from 20% to 40%. Asked for a dollar amount, he said Hayden should spend $1.8 million. He said Hayden spends more on parks, recreation, and public works than it does on law enforcement. I understand the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, show me a city anywhere in Kootenai County that's spending twice as much or three times as much on public works and parks and rec than they do on law enforcement, he said. It's non-existent. KCSO is responding to more service calls in Hayden, which is draining other resources for the rest of the county, he said, and that it is having an effect. Quote, we are starting to have problems in other areas of the county, he said. Arrests and citations are down, which Norris said means crime is going to increase. More funding would allow KCSO to keep better tabs on people on probation and parole when they move to the area, quote, to be sure that they are on the straight and narrow. He would like to see at least one deputy per 1,000 residents. Hayden could form its own police department, but Norris said, quote, we believe we can do it better and cheaper. He urged citizens to talk to neighbors, attend council meetings, and get involved and let their elected leaders know their concerns. Hayden, Norris said, is no longer a rural community. It's attracting more people and not all have good intentions. The result could be increased burglaries and vehicle theft unless the city focuses funds on the community-based policing model. Quote, we're going to start seeing things creep up all over the place, he said. I don't know. Everything he said makes total sense, except for I kind of with that number of people in Hayden now,
yeah,
it kind of makes sense for them to have their own police department.
It does.
I mean, small little city of Kellogg,
mm-hmm.
you know,
that's right,
has its own police department.
That's very true.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe, but I also understand that having your own police department is a cost.
Definitely. Yeah. But no, I agree with 17,000 people.
That's a lot of people. I had no idea.
I didn't know that either.
That's totally off
that
my radar.
That was the population of Hayden.
That is crazy. Okay, what else we got?
All right. NIC presidential search moving at snail's pace. This is by Hannah Neff. A North Idaho college trustee said he's frustrated at what little progress has been made so far in finding the college a permanent president. At the Wednesday board meeting at the college, trustee Ken Howard said most of the slowing down is due to different opinions held by him and board chair Todd Banducci, the other co-chair of the search committee. Since the board voted to direct the administration to sign a contract with an academic search consulting firm to begin the search on December 15th, Howard said he and Banducci have spent an excess of 8 hours so far discussing the proper structure for creating the search committee with the consultant from the Poly Group. Quote, "We have different approaches to representation," end quote. The search committee would consist of a citizens group of representatives from different areas of the community, as well as representatives from constituent groups on campus. Howard said both creating the categories as well as identifying people to represent them has proceeded at a snail's pace. Part of the reason it's been slow is because of 1-1 votes, which means no action is taken, Howard said. He said he thought Banducci wanted to have a say in every representation in every group, while Howard felt that constituent groups should select their own representative, and the community should also say who they would like to represent them. Trustee Christy Wood said members of constituent groups are responsible for filling their own committee's charge. She suggested all the trustees get together and make a list of names for people in the community that they thought represented different areas of industry to serve on the citizens' committee. Howard's motion to authorize established constituent groups to appoint their own representatives to the search committee failed, with Banducci and trustee Greg McKenzie voting against it. McKenzie said because a report from a constituent group said they thought the mix of candidates who volunteered to serve on the committee was a good mix of representation of NIC, he thought the motion was unwise. Howard said he's frustrated that they can't get through the process faster with more agreements, but they do have a proposed search project calendar that they are attempting to meet so they can get the job posted. Quote, "We have to do it as quickly as possible," Howard said. For those who wish to provide input and engagement regarding the opportunities and challenges facing the college and leadership qualities NIC should seek in its next president, the Poly Group is hosting 4 open forums at NIC's main campus for the community. The forums will take place on Tuesday from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. and 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. in the Edminster Student Union Building, Lake Coeur d'Alene Room, and on Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. and 6 to 7 p.m. in Driftwood Bay. Interim President Michael Cibali said on Friday the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities extended an invitation for himself and Steve Kurtz, the College Accreditation Liaison Officer, to meet with its executive board virtually. NIC's accreditation is currently under review by the NWCCU, the college's accrediting organization. A virtual site visit was paid to the college following a second letter of complaint over actions of the NIC Board of Trustees sent by 4 local human rights task forces. Cibali said they have been asked to provide the NWCCU with information on the complaint that led to the visit, their considerations on the peer evaluation panel's draft report, and any update at the college since the site visit in January. The meeting date has not yet been set, but Cibali said he anticipates it will be within the next few weeks.
Okay, well, I just wish things would level out at NIC.
Me too, yeah.
It goes, that's just something that I, that place is important. And,
it is important. I got my first, yeah, my first 2 years of college, I got from NIC. Yeah.
Same
and
here.
I agree. Like I saved a lot of money going there. I did enjoy going there. Like I had a really, yeah, I agree. It's important. And especially for these kids who, I mean, it's a technical school too. Like there's technical things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important. So here's hoping things just level out.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Friday, February 25th headlines. A lot of coverage. We had the front page of the Coeur d'Alene Press had a lot of stuff on Ukraine and obviously the situation that's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to read all of those stories, but we will handle one here in particular from an Idaho senator or congressman rather. Headline: Fulcher, prepare for turbulence. This is by Mike Patrick. Your gas prices are likely to go up. Grocery store shelves could soon resemble the stark pandemic selves. And inflation, already on an uncomfortable trajectory, could go even higher. Those are just some of the disruptions North Idahoans may see ahead, U.S. Representative Russ Fulcher said Thursday. Quote, anytime there's unrest at this level, this has the potential to throw the world into a very anxious situation, Fulcher told the press in a phone interview. Quote, whenever that happens, weird things happen. People understandably buy two or three times what they need at a grocery store to stock up, and then you see the snowball effect throughout this our supply chain. We've seen it in the not-too-distant past with toilet tissue and bottled water, which made no sense to me, but okay. Fulcher, the Republican representing Idaho's first district since 2019, was among others meeting with administration officials Thursday afternoon. His message, quote, no boots on the ground, but trying to go after it fiscally. In other words, hit Russian President Vladimir Putin right where it hurts. Fulcher said that the Biden administration put into place U.S. policies that greatly restrict fossil fuel production and export to Europe. Quote, Russia has filled the void, he said, and that's given Putin a significant revenue stream. Fulcher's advice, quote, reverse the energy policy, fire up those exports to our friends again because they used to buy from us. Now they're buying from him. Cut off his revenue stream through the energy channel and we get a double win. We choke him and we bolster our own economy and our own energy independence. Emphasizing that he has no inside information but is basing his opinion on a great deal of observation, Fulcher addressed two other key questions that the Russian invasion of Ukraine are leading Americans to ask. One, is the U.S. poised to launch a cyber attack on Russia? Not likely, Fulcher guessed. The reason you haven't seen the U.S. wage a cyber attack is because, very possibly, the Russian capacity for that is greater than ours, he conceded. He paused before adding, that also may be one of the impacts we feel here. If they do tie up certain banking channels, certain power channels, that is a possibility that we could feel, so people should be prepared for that. And two, is there anything else our country can do to help bring the conflict to a quick end? The choking off financial strategy is likely to take time for $30 trillion of good reasons, he said. Our strength the past few decades has been our fiscal position, Fulcher said. We were able to break the Soviet Union because we outspent them. We're $30 trillion in debt now. They're not. Rather than spend heavily on military support, Fulcher emphasized the importance of boosting U.S. energy production and export. Quote, he's kind of a one-trick pony, he said of Putin. The Russian economy is very dependent on energy. If we choke that off, eventually we'll take away his capacity to be expansionist. We'll make it through this, added Fulcher, a recent renal cancer survivor. It's just ugly. Yeah, here's hoping that things just work out over there. As far as, you know, energy dependency and whatnot, that is always going to be, you know, their strong suit, as, you know, oil is oil.
Yep.
You know, transferring off of that's going to be a big thing. So we're not relying on that anymore.
Yeah.
I think that that's one way to take that. But as far as economy goes, I don't know. Just following the value of the ruble right now is at a not an all time low, but it's pretty low
right now. Yeah.
The Russian economy, they're not known for having solid economies even after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is just going to make things worse for them. All right, let's jump into our very special interview today with publisher Clint Schroeder, along with Hayden Mayer, Steve Griffiths.
Steve, it is nice to be here with you today. I appreciate taking a little bit of time and talking to our readers, our listeners, about some of the exciting things that are happening in your life right now.
Thanks, Clint. Happy to be with you.
I appreciate that. Today, our special guest, of course, Steve Griffiths, mayor of Hayden, Idaho. Steve, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Happy to. My career with GTE, AT&T, and in finance was able to take our families throughout the United States and Western Europe. Being in finance, economics, accounting, I was able every time we moved to buy high and sell low. So that was an extremely strong financial position for our family. We moved every 2 years. Usually we went to the places that were the hardest hit or that needed focus. And there's principles that you establish. Establishing a strong culture allows those, you know, areas to solidify. And then the second year, it was usually pretty successful. And my poor wife would see that look on my face when it was time to move again. So had a great career in that regard. I was one of three vice presidents with an organization. We ended up coming back here. I'm a graduate of Coeur d'Alene High School in 1973. Most of you were not born then. I met my wife later in college, served a mission, came back to school. She was not yet married, and so I begged and pleaded, and that was very kind of her. We have four kids that are all married, 14 grandchildren. One family lives in Illinois, and the other three live here, which is great. So background-wise, when I came back after my private enterprise opportunities, I guess, the position for Jobs Plus opened up, and that was to recruit companies. And people that have just moved here in the last two, three years don't understand that we were at 20% unemployment. We were dead economically. And it's hard to believe now. But the pioneers that really pushed this thing forward, Mr. Hagedon, Mr. Richards, lots of other individuals were involved. And this community invested heavily in how we can recruit companies to the area. And so we had an available workforce that was really well-trained and knowledgeable. We had affordable housing. We had a strong focus on education. Those were three key elements for that process to be successful. And so we raided California and other areas, and we were able to bring thousands of jobs to our area. And what a great blessing that has been for many, many families. So that was phenomenal. After 12 years, I had said, you always need a new football coach. You always need a new coach. 12 years is a good opportunity. And so when I left, Ron McIntyre, who we had known, our family had known them since we moved here in 1970. And Ron said, okay, I need you to move to Hayden, because I was living in Hayden Lake, and I need you to be mayor. And I thought, that'll be a great sell for my wife. So I came home. She was in the midst of doing work with Hayden Meadows, and I guess there was a concert that night. We found a home in a few hours and figured out a way to move to Hayden, and then was fortunate enough to be able to be the mayor for the last 6 years, I guess that election, and then the one 2 years ago.
Yeah, fantastic. Out of the frying pan, into the fire.
Yes.
As I say. So, long time, been here a while. You know the community very well. Tell us maybe a little from your perspective what you've seen change, maybe better or worse.
Oh, there's a lot. Better, a 17-year-old doesn't have to go to Spokane for his dates. That was always a key element to when we moved here. But Hayden had one blinking light in 1970. It was at Hayden Avenue and Government Way, right next to Hayden School. And that was all. And Government Way was the north-south freeway or arterial, if you would, to Sandpoint. So you just take Government Way all the way to Sandpoint. So think about that then to now. I mean, because you want to balance commercial growth and residential growth, and you want to be able to provide for your families. What happened back then, which was really critical, is that high school graduates and college graduates couldn't come back to the area. I mean, there was nothing here to pull them, either Coeur d'Alene or even Spokane to some level. And so part of that focus at Jobs Plus was to be able to help the next generation come to the area and be able to settle and be able to have an occupation or a career. And it didn't have to be just college. It could be certifications. There's a lot of different options that existed. And within that time at Jobs Plus, K-Tech was created, an amazing miracle. Ron Nilsen and others need great credit for that, how that was created, because it provided options in so many areas. But so long answer, we're at a crossroads that we weren't at 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And it's a hard thing to balance. How do we balance that commercial growth that we want and the residential growth that allows the commercial growth to be effective? So for the worse, there's just people. But overall, the interesting part is that I still talk to and enjoy good people trying to figure out how to keep this area the way it was from a quality of life standpoint. We used to take care of our neighbors. We knew their names. We would help them. We would be a part of them. If we were going to the grocery store, we'd pick up stuff for them. I mean, it was a completely wonderful feeling. And then I think for the worst part, that feeling seems to have changed in the last couple of years in particular. It is what it is. I know people are concerned, but we have to be able to be humanity, and we have to tell the truth. We have to figure out whatever our responsibilities are, that we're accountable for those. It is what it is. We have, 150,000 people in the county now. Pulse Falls continues to grow. Coeur d'Alene can't, because we can't develop anything on water, and they're cut off from everywhere else geographically. Hayden's done a good job. There hasn't been any annexations that haven't been asked. So Hayden doesn't look to go out. Rathrum's filling in the blanks. The aquifers, the studies, and I've been a part of the aquifer study and review and research firms or groups for many years. The aquifer, thank heavens, remains strong, clean, cold. If you ever touch the water, pretty cold. So there's a lot of wonderful infrastructurally sound foundations that we have to allow for the people that live here to be able to live here without threat, without concerns with the things that are necessary to be able to live. Law enforcement, we're the only city, Hayden's the only city without a police force. So that's kept our levy rate about one-fifth of every other city. That's good and bad. Law enforcement with the sheriffs, they've got to be able to take care of their responsibilities, not just Hayden. So, you balance that, and we've tried two levies. Both didn't get the adequate number of votes that were needed to be able to pay for law enforcement. In fact, it's really a great story. For the second one, we had a citizen advisory group that was amazing in terms of the eclectic group. I mean, there were people from everywhere. And they unanimously made a recommendation to the council. That recommendation was then passed to the voters. And there was a one page identifying what the cost would be and so on. And I mean, this was $475,000, I think, was the number. That was a couple, 3 years ago. And to be able to get 24-hour dedicated coverage in Hayden, and it did not pass. It didn't get to the 60% that was necessary. And I tried to talk to those people that reached out that said we didn't vote for it. And what were the reasons why? And there was so much clamor, distrust, non-fact out there online. And once I explained things to probably 30 people, they said, well, we would have voted for it. We didn't understand that. So hopefully the next time with the sheriff's direction, the citizens of Hayden will have the opportunity to be able to dedicate funds associated with dedicated coverage.
Yeah, that's excellent. So thinking back over the last 6 years, there's one thing maybe you could change about that 6 years. What would it be?
Like we talked back, I don't do very well sometimes going backwards. But in this case, I wish that we would have – I think law enforcement's one of the biggest keys. And then as we've tried to prepare, I wish I would have communicated or the city would have communicated clearly and effectively with respect to the comprehensive plan. I think sometimes when there's a vacuum out there, it gets filled, however way it gets filled. And this was a phenomenal job done, not perfect, but Melissa Cleveland and team, Melissa's no longer there, really did a great job in identifying Okay. If, in fact, all these things that we don't want to have happen are going to happen, then we need to prepare for them. And I love the adage, one of the individuals that talked to me that didn't want growth made the statement. They said, I was waiting on southbound Government Way at Honeysuckle for two rotations of the light. And she said, I don't like waiting at the light. And I said, I don't know anyone that does. And she goes, she looked at me and said, you should have planned better. And I just kind of smiled and said, that's part of a comprehensive plan, is to plan better and to identify what are the things that are going to be out there in 20 years, and are we prepared as a city to be able to enhance what needs to be done educationally, with roads, with sewer, with all the things that comprises a vibrant city.
I appreciate that. Yesterday was your 7th State of the City address.
It was.
Maybe some highlights from that for us.
Biggest one is I'm older and fatter than I've ever been. But it's interesting, with all the things that were going on, that have gone on, I wanted to highlight for those individuals the fact, you know, for every individual in the city of Hayden, a couple of things. One is that from an infrastructure standpoint, we have about $5.5 million in infrastructure needs and about $500,000 to pay for them. And that's okay. That is what it is. And we'll do the best we can within that scope. Financial condition, we have been able to keep expenses as a city. I mean, those people, the employees of the city of Hayden, are magnificent. And I said that. They're just experts in what they do. They work hard. They get up at 3 a.m. to make sure that our roads are taken care of. But when COVID hit, we weren't sure about our revenue level, and so we dropped expenses immediately. And those employees, they embraced it and said, we understand. But our financial condition every year is strong. Revenues have exceeded expenses. We have 31, I think, full-time. So that was a highlight. People worry about growth, and they should, but our average growth rate over the last 5 years is 3%. 3%. That's responsible. And not only that, is that for our single family homes, 83% of our total inventory is single family homes. 10% is mobile homes. So 83 and 10, 93, it's really 92.9, but that's okay, which would be a great radio station number, are either mobile homes or single family. So people came to me hugely concerned about an influx of units that had, or structures that had 10 to 19 multifamily units in them. And right now that's 0.9% of our overall inventory. So, you know, you're going to look, but it was nice to be able to just provide fact and help the citizens understand where we really are, because there's a lot of stuff out there, and this is fact, and we could take it for whatever it is. If people don't think 3% over the last 5 years is appropriate, perfect, because we were 2.7% in 2021, 2.4% in 2019. The only reason we were at 4% is 2020 is because Governor Inslee allowed all the commercial and residential construction from Washington to come over to Idaho.
That's right.
So those were the highlights, I think, that I wanted to share, that we've stayed the course. There hasn't been any spikes or valleys, and we stayed the course.
Done a great job.
Thank you.
Steve, you're well-liked. You're a popular guy. You get everything well-aligned for the job that you're in. Let's address the elephant in the room. What led you to decide?
You know, being a council member, being a mayor, there it's a different level of accountability and responsibility. And we've tried to be able to highlight and understand the priorities that exist within that area. So if anybody has any questions about what took place, it's real easy. We are on YouTube thanks to Sandra White. Really, she was great about getting us more in front of the public, which is where we needed to be. So Councilmember White helped push that. We are on YouTube. If you want to go to the the February 22nd, so 2/22/22, YouTube for Hayden City Council right after the public comment. You could see what occurred and judge for yourself.
Excellent. Okay.
So I had to make a decision, and that's mine, but we can all judge for ourselves. It's right there.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us, and I hope everybody takes the time to take a look, learn for themselves. So you're going to be missed. We know that for sure. What's next for you?
I don't know. I like it to be warmer.
Well, that would help.
It'd be nice. A lot, yeah. One of the things that did occur is sometimes you get so involved in the things that need to be done that you focus so many times on trees, different trees, but the trees instead of the forest. And the community, 175, 200 people have reached out to me, all being positive. We still have a strong, selfless, hardworking group of people in our community. And they're the ones that have laid the foundation and that we've kind of built on it. And I thought yesterday in the state of the city that we need now more people. I highlighted some individuals that really were, power boats in the process. And I said, we need to move from water skier to power boat in the process. And because there's a lot going on for both sides. There are people that are genuinely concerned about what needs to be done and they think needs to be done. And their opinions are really valid, just like everybody else's.
Sure.
And you try to balance that. But going forward, I'd like to try to enjoy some warm time and walking and having a different focus in life. That would be nice.
It'd be good for all of us.
It would. I was surprised. I had my blood pressure done, and it's okay. I won't still. But I was surprised that it wasn't skyrocketed. So,
we know you're from a famous golf family. Maybe some time to lower that handicap.
It would be good because the handicap hasn't gotten down, and I did hit balls about 3 weeks ago, and they were more crooked and shorter than I ever recall. So we'll figure out life at some point. It'll be nice to focus on those other things. And then my wife will teach for a couple of years and we'll go. Our plan is to go on a mission. And we don't know where that mission would be, but that's the plan right now. So that's it'll awesome. Be nice to get my name out of the news and just be able to do the things that we need to do.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate the time that you've spent with us today, but more importantly, the 6 years that you gave to our community. Thank you very much for all you've done and for staying as positive as you are. And you've definitely made a difference. I hope you know that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's really been my pleasure and honor. And so I'd like to thank you guys and my citizens and those that either agree or disagree with what's going on and the wonderful employees at the City of Hayden. I mean, it's an honor to be representing all of them. So my pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, you left it better than you found it, and that's all we can ask.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right, let's jump into show news press headlines for Friday, February 25th. Date chosen for South Fork cleanup. This is by Josh McDonald. A tentative date has been set for an expansive cleanup effort in the South Fork Coeur d'Alene River as it cuts through the city of Wallace. Last fall, Wallace City Councilman Elmer Matilla announced that he was exploring the idea of getting a committee together in hopes of removing the estimated thousands of pounds of metal that is littered throughout the channel. Quote, it's all pretty much all heavy industrial type of metal that was either thrown in or dropped in during the days when the stream was considered to be Lead Creek and you couldn't even see the bottom or what was in the water, Matilla said. I think most of it has been here since the early 1900s, more commonly referred to as Shit Creek. Following Wallace's February council meeting, Matilla alerted the rest of the group that he had put together a six-person committee that had settled tentatively on holding their volunteer-based cleanup effort during the second weekend of September. In early September, the water levels through the channel are significantly lower, as are the temperatures, which will make working conditions ideal for a completely voluntary job. When it comes to a project like this, things can get a little prickly when it comes to getting permission and coordinating with the various agencies, groups like the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, IDEA,
DEQ, and the Shoshone Board of County Commissioners, who all have a say in what happens in and around the river. Quote, currently we are considering the weekend after Labor Day, September 10th and 11th, for the cleanup days, Matilla said. There have been conversations with most of the agencies, and so far it is encouraging with no major issues to our project. The thing about most volunteer-based projects is that they require the donation of manpower, but this project may need more than just a high number of able-bodied recruits. Quote, Some contractors and machinery have indicated that they may be able to help us out, and interested volunteers say they hope to assist as well, Matilla said. We're going to need heavy machinery to pull most of what's in there out. Matilla is exploring some options for funding and is open to any donations that want to be made to the project, but is also exploring grant applications in the hopes of making sure that the project doesn't stall out due to a lack of available resources. If you're interested in helping out with the South Fork Cleanup Project, please contact El Matilla at eMatilla, that's M-A-T-T-I-L-A, 48, at gmail.com. What do you think about that, Molly?
Well, you know what's kind of funny is I've lived here most of my life and I still had to look out. I was like, wait, where is where is Lead Creek? Where mm-hmm. is which
it's just the South Fork near near Wallace.
Yeah, and yeah, we need to clean it up.
Yeah, that's
definitely
probably, probably a good way to get into that.
Exactly. Yep.
Molly, you wrote this next one.
I did. Neon Metals bar sign recreated from a classic image. An old photo and willingness to recreate nostalgia led to some cool new illumination in downtown Wallace. Metals bar owners Jeremy and Katie Watterson saw an old photograph of Wallace when they bought the bar 3 years ago and immediately noticed a large neon sign that they wanted to create. The photo from the Bernard Stockbridge collection told a very interesting story. The year was 1946 and a group of bagpipers is playing in the Slippery Gulch Parade. Behind the band are the Samuels Hotel, Western Union, and the Metals Bar with the iconic sign in the background. Quote, we saw this photo when the Metals was part of the Samuels Hotel down the street. There was a sign we noticed in the background that we did our best to replicate with the lettering and the shape. End quote. The Wattersons commissioned Zach Rodstead from Seattle to hand paint the sign with attention to the original design. The sign was then sent to Baldwin Signs in Spokane for the neon assembly. Quote, it's an interesting process because no one person builds neon signs. You have one person who fabricates metal, another who paints the sign, one who does the electrical work, one who works on glass, and then you slowly put it all together. But you can't just give your design to one person and have them take care of it, said Katie. The sign took about 2 years in total to be built. The process took a significant amount of time because one person could not finish it. Quote, we sent the photo off, sent him the blueprints to fabricate, and then it sat for a while until I could find someone to paint it. Then it sat for a while as I found someone to work with the neon. To find someone to do neon anymore is really pretty tricky. And so finding someone who can bend, shape, and mold it. Once the sign is built, there is still the possibility of breaking because the glass is so fragile. Quote, talk about a dying art, neon bending and glass bending. When the company came to install it, they broke two letters of the sign. So then they later had to come back out and reset the last two letters. And as he was doing that, he bumped another letter with his elbow and it broke. This is like a 500-pound egg that had to be delicately placed on the building. When the lengthy process was over, the Wattersons were able to see the final result and they were thrilled with the final product. They unveiled the sign late last year with a ribbon cutting and reception. Since that time, the sign has caught the eyes of many people, locals, and tourists alike. Quote, this couldn't have turned out any better. This is exactly how I envisioned it. It's our contribution to the town, Jeremy said with a smile. It will last longer than the time we own the bar, and hopefully the time that I am on planet Earth. End quote.
Aww.
It's a pretty cool sign. I mean, really. And it like cool. The all of the stuff that they had to go through, all the people that they had to send it to. Yeah, it's cool. I love the thing how this is like a 500-pound egg. Mm-hmm. I loved that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. Oh, it's delicate.
It's very delicate.
But based on that photo mm-hmm. that you ran with it, mm-hmm. they got pretty close.
They really did, yeah. Which is awesome.
So, kind of speaking about the metals again, mm-hmm. I wrote this next story. Talk mm-hmm. about top shelf. Throwing some ice in a glass of these rare creations could be cause to get something else thrown at you. This is the level of rarity we're talking about here when it comes to a few bottles of bourbon that recently arrived in the Silver Valley. Making their way to the top shelves of the Metals and Silver Corner bars in Wallace are three bottles of Old Rip Van Winkle bourbon, also known as Pappy Van Winkle. At the Metals, owners Katie and Jeremy Watterson currently offer both the Old Rip Van Winkle 10-year and the Van Winkle Special Reserve, while over at the Silver Corner, co-owner Jocelyn Bachman offers the Special Reserve. While these bottles of incredibly rare alcohols join several others that the two establishments carry, these are definitely the standouts. Katie states that Pappy Van Winkle releases less than 7,000 cases a year, 12 in a case, worldwide every year. Quote, they're super lowly allocated to the state of Idaho or the world, Jeremy said. You have to be in the lottery with the state of Idaho, and then you win the opportunity to buy the bottle. Similarly to how one would put in for the opportunity to buy a moose hunting tag, the local bar owners threw their names into the hat to buy the bottles on November 22, 2021. It wasn't until mid-January that they had shipped. The fact that not just one, but two bars from the same small town in North Idaho won is a bit of a small miracle, considering the many metropolitan establishments to compete with. Quote, I would be willing to bet that there aren't 20 bars in the state that got something, Jeremy said. The Watersons and Bachman explained that the notoriety of the Pappy Van Winkle name has a lot to do with their decision to put in for the bottles. To certain collectors or enthusiasts, these are the cream of the crop. Quote, over the last 10 to 15 years, collecting rare or limited release bourbons has become a thing, Bachman said. It's a super intense hobby for a lot of people all over the world, really, but definitely the American contingent is pretty ravenous about some of these rare releases. Bottles such as these have been known to be privately sold in the $1,200 range. Even the empty bottles have substantial value and have been known to be sold for hundreds of dollars. While Watterson's and Bachman are currently offering pricey pours of Pappy by the ounce at their establishments, they aren't exactly in a rush to drain the bottles anytime soon. Quote, I don't really care if I ever open any of them, Jeremy said. It's like having gold medals on your back bar, Bachman added. Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't include it in the story, but if you're looking to, the type of currency that has, I don't know, maybe President Grant on it. if you're not really too attached to that type of currency,
get yourself a glass.
You could get yourself a glass. We'll put it that way. Pricey stuff. All right, let's push even further north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of Sandpoint. Headlines Wednesday, February 23rd.
All right, this is by Emily Bonsant. WBCSD sets finalist interviews. West Bonner County School District search for a new superintendent is underway. Superintendent Paul Anselmo informed the board last summer that he will be retiring in June 2022. He has been the superintendent the last 8 years, and his family is from the area. Announced as finalists are Jacqueline Bronham, Michael Roby, Kimberly Shaner, and Amber Williams. The board will conduct interviews for the finalists on March 8th in executive session. After board interviews, candidates will move to the middle school for a question and answer session with each finalist, where questions from community members will be asked. Questions can be emailed to Steve Pavey, the board clerk, or dropped at the district office no later than March 7th at 4 p.m. Questions can be submitted before the Q&A. This starts at 5:30 until 5:50 to allow time for the questions to be sorted and for the event to start at 6 p.m. Each candidate will be allotted 45 minutes for questions. Quote, my recommendation would not be to have all the candidates up there at once because then they could play off somebody else's answer, Anselmo told the board. He also suggested that the forum be recorded in order to provide context to candidate comments if they were misconstrued later on. The board made the discussion to start the event promptly at 6 p.m. since they did not know at the time how many candidates would be interviewed and then participate in the forum. After the board meeting, the trustees went to executive session and looked through superintendent applicants.
Okay.
There we go.
Uh-huh. Moving on, equipment, parade, focus of meeting. This is by Anissa Keith. In a brief but productive weekly business meeting, commissioners allocated approximately $1,286,696.45, what a very random specific number, in routine spending, received $120,000 in grant funding from the Idaho Department of Lands, and approved Coulin's May 28th Spring Festival Parade, amongst other items of business. Commissioners approved the minutes from last week's meeting before proceeding on to the main agenda. The first item brought by the clerk's office included county and emergency medical service claims and demanded batch spending totaling $1,187,996.45. Claims and demand batch spending is a kind of cost or expense invoking the county and non-governmental third parties. This type of routine spending is essential to carrying out county maintenance and services. Commissioners approved both action items. Road and Bridge brought three items before the commission, the first seeking the board's approval to buy up to 10,000 cubic yards of sand from the Idaho Transportation Department. The purchase agreement would not exceed $9,800 and would allow the county to access and use the sand for 2 years. I hate sand.
It gets in
rough everything. And it's coarse. And it gets everywhere. It
gets everywhere.
In our efforts to keep the roads safe during winter, the county tends to put a lot of sand for traction. That sand on the open market and getting it crushed in our rock crushing bids is pretty expensive, said Matt Mulder, staff engineer for the department. This is about 15 to 20 times cheaper than if we had were to buy and crush it ourselves, so it's really a good deal. That's it. Okay. I'm taking a stance right now. The podcast, we were already anti-parade. Okay, we were already anti-parade. Doesn't matter what it is. We support what you're doing, uh-huh. But you don't need to throw a parade about it. Now we're also anti-sand.
Anti-sand.
Yeah, uh-huh. We can think of something else to put on the roads.
True.
Something that's not so rough and coarse. And it gets everywhere.
It gets everywhere.
Star Wars makes another appearance on the show. Commissioner Jeff Connolly expressed support for the lease agreement. Quote, this is something that we do. We have now done for probably 10 years, Connolly said. We keep rotating those out, and it keeps us in new graders that have really great prices. Commissioners approved all three action items. The treasurer's office bought two items before the commission, the first asking the commission to approve a treasurer and auditor joint quarterly report. The second asked the commission to allow a solid waste department to accept credit cards at their office in the administration building. I would think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Quote, it's our credit card service that we use for many county departments. The solid waste department would like to be able to accept credit cards at their counter downstairs. It's not ready for use at the site, said Cheryl Feil. Peel?
Mm-hmm.
County treasurer. The agreement is between the county and Access Idaho, a private company owned by North Idaho College. Commissioners approved both action items. The public defender's office asked the commission to approve a contract change between personnel and the office. Quote, our felony level conflict attorney is moving to California and can't fulfill the contract anymore. There's no additional money being allocated for this. It would just be a different provider, public defender Susie Jensen said. Emergency management brought one item before the commission, asked to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Idaho Department of Lands to receive $120,000 in grant funding. The county will have to pay $12,000 of that sum in order to qualify for the receiving funds. The planning department asked the commission to sign a resolution approving the vacation of the portion of North Thyma Road in Priest River. The nearly three-quarter mile stretch of road is entirely within the property owned by JD Lumber Incorporated. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the road vacation in December. Commissioners decided to agree with the Planning and Zoning Commission and signed the resolution vacating the road. The main agenda ended with commissioners approving a permit for a May 28th parade in Kulin in conjunction with the Priest Lake Spring Festival. The parade is expected to see an attendance of approximately 2,000 people. Throw some sand at them.
Instead of candy.
No? Oh, candy, right. Of course, that's what I meant. Yeah. Definitely wouldn't throw sand at them. Why would I do that? Shortly after McDonald recessed the meeting before reconvening for executive session with four-item agenda. Okay, sounds like they're getting stuff done at the commissioners' meeting.
Yes, they are.
All right, moving on. Thursday, February 24th.
Okay, we have Gervasi case may head to state high court. This is by Anissa Keith. A Bonner County man may have one or more of his court cases seen by the Idaho Supreme Court. Joshua Christopher Gervasi, 28, is being held in the Bonner County Jail until the appeal hearing takes place, although a date has yet to be determined. Gervasi appealed two of his active court cases to the Idaho Supreme Court in early February on the grounds that the First District Court failed to uphold a February 2020 joint plea bargain made in both cases. The plea bargain resulted from two separate 2019 cases where Gervasi faced a total of 17 charges. On May 23, 2019, Gervasi gained 8 charges of grand theft, 2 counts of unlawful possession of a firearm, and a count of possession of a controlled substance. The remaining charges were acquired on September 27, 2019, gaining Gervasi 2 charges of aggravated assault, 3 charges of firing a weapon at an occupied vehicle,
and a charge of unlawfully possessing a weapon. Gervasi signed a joint plea bargain on February 10, 2020 in both cases, pleading guilty to a charge of grand theft in the May case and a count of aggravated assault in the September case. In exchange for the guilty plea, the sentencing was agreed to be served concurrently, meaning that the sentences would be served at the same time as opposed to consecutively, where one sentence would begin once the other was completed. Court documents indicate that the plea bargain was non-binding, meaning the court reserves the option to not follow the agreement, without nullifying the guilty pleas. Throughout the court process, 15 of Gervasi's 17 charges were dismissed. 5 were dropped in the direct connection to the February 10th plea bargain. He was released the next day on his own recognizance while awaiting sentencing. On May 4th, 2020, Gervasi failed to appear for sentencing and warrants for his arrest were issued in both cases. Over 14 months later, in June 2021, Gervasi was arrested in Boundary County after leading law enforcement on a high-speed pursuit beginning in Bonner County. Gervasi gained 9 more charges as a result. 2 charges for trafficking, 1 for methamphetamine, another for heroin, 3 charges for possession of a controlled substance, 2 charges for unlawfully possessing a weapon, a paraphernalia charge, and felony enhancement. The Boundary County Prosecutor's Office dropped the case without prejudice on October 15th on grounds that more investigation was being done. Gervasi's defense objected to the dismissal, arguing that the charges will reemerge in a new case at an unknown future date, implying a violation of Gervasi's right to due process. No court documents can be found pursuing the charges since then. On October 18th, First District Judge Barbara Buchanan sentenced Gervasi in both cases. In the May 2019 grand theft case, Buchanan sentenced Gervasi to 2 to 5 years, and an additional 3 to 5 years in the September 2019 aggravated assault case. The judgment of conviction specified that the sentences were to be served consecutively instead of concurrently, which was previously agreed to as per the February 2020 plea bargain. Proceedings were then handed over to the First District Judge Lamont Perez. On January 25th, Perez sentenced Gervasi in both cases, entering 2 separate judgments of conviction into court documents. A sentence of 5 to 10 years was imposed in the May 2019 grand theft case, and an additional 5-year sentence issued in the September 2019 aggravated assault case, this time to run concurrently. Appeals to the Supreme Court were then dismissed as the original argument made by the defense was remedied. In response to the new sentence, Gervasi's defense team filed a Rule 35 motion in both cases, asking for reduction in sentencing as a plea for leniency. Perez denied both Rule 35 motions on February 3rd, ruling that all relevant evidence that would influence a conviction was already reviewed and considered by the court during sentencing. The denials resulted in Gervasi's defense appealing once again to the Idaho Supreme Court on February 8th and February 4th, respectively. Additionally, defense teams filed for a delay in exercising judgment in both cases until the appeal process is completed. Perez denied both requests days later. A state appellate defender has been assigned in both cases, and any future court proceedings have yet to be scheduled.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of legal minutiae for somebody who is just taking every step can to delay the inevitable.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess that, I mean, that can be done in our legal system. Mm-hmm. So there it is. All right. Moving on to Friday, February 25th, sprinkler line behind City Hall flooding. This by Kevin Lobsinger. If staff hadn't been working late, the damage from a frozen sprinkler line could have been much worse. When the line froze, Sandpoint City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton said it caused a sprinkler to spray water in City Hall, ultimately sending it from the second floor to the first floor. In some areas, there was standing water up to the 2 inches. Quote, we've had just a number of building issues and failures, Stapleton said. We've had a big roof leak on the second floor, kind of in the same area, about 2 years ago, so we had to replace the roof with that, but it's just over time. I think a combination of deferred upgrades and deferred capital are kind of catching up to us right now. Fortunately, much of the damage on the first floor was cosmetic, with about a fourth of the ceiling damage saturated by the water, causing them to fall onto the desk and floor below. Quote, "Our City Hall building is tired," she said. "It's likely that the lack of insulation in the roof area at City Hall caused the sprinkler line to freeze." Quote, "Staff have historically had to make do at City Hall as it is," Stapleton said. "So there were doors to mechanical rooms that had to be left open, doors to storage rooms that had to be left open, the door to the second floor had to be left open to move heat up there because there was an inadequate insulation in the building," she said. Addressing the issue that was among the areas identified for a future renovation at the building, purchased several decades ago from Coldwater Creek. Since that time, Stapleton said that there have been no significant updates of the building since that time. The area where the sprinkler line likely froze is an area that had not yet been addressed in a remodel. Unfortunately, Stapleton said, the leak in water happened over an area where the recent customer service remodel had taken place. After the city announced it was closing City Hall due to the water leak, some posted comments online saying city officials knew about the problem and should have taken steps to prevent the line from freezing. Stapleton said the issue should have been addressed with proper insulation, quote, a significant amount of time ago. What prevented the damage from being worse was the presence of some staff who were still in the building when the water started seeping from the second floor to the first floor. An alarm to alert staff to such a situation is located in the police department. However, all the officers were out on patrol. Quote, "We definitely would have had a lot more water and a lot more damage than we did. Fortunately, because a few of us were still working in the office," she said. What many may not realize is City Hall facility is actually two buildings combined into one. The fire and police departments and council chambers are in what once was the Coldwater Creek warehouse. The rest of the building to the north is what was once what the company's office. When an engineer inspected the building as part of this first remodel, Stapleton said structural issues were found in the fire bay, which may had to be addressed. If the building had been hit or there had been a significant earthquake, she said there could have been a catastrophic damage to the building. As the remodel project moved forward, she said improvements are being done with an eye to the bring value to the city's taxpayers, from switching to energy efficient LED lights to installing a building-wide generator that would allow the city to use the facility as an emergency warming shelter. While the city has planned to be closed Wednesday and Thursday, Stapleton said residents still showed up both days to pay their utility bills and handle other business. Staff were moved into the city and fire areas and to council chambers where they were able to help the public. City Hall is now open to the public today. I'm glad they figured that out.
Yeah.
All right, let's push further, even further north to the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Headlines coming from Thursday, February 24th.
All right, we have new BFPD Garrett on board by Cynthia Bonsant. Officer Jeremy Garrett has joined the Bonner's Ferry Police Department. Garrett originally thought that he would go to school to be an elementary physical education teacher, but in talking over his options, a school counselor encouraged him to look into criminal justice. Garrett followed the suggestion and found it was a perfect fit. Garrett has a bachelor's degree in sociology with a concentration in criminal justice and a minor in psychology, and a master's in criminal justice executive leadership. Garrett grew up in Pickens County, South Carolina, in the small town of Liberty. Garrett and his family always wanted to live in the western United States, so he and his wife and children moved to Pasco, Washington in 2008, after being a deputy in South Carolina for 9.5 years. Quote, "We fell in love with the Pacific Northwest," end quote. For the last 3 years, Garrett has been working with the police department in Pasco. Garrett comes very highly recommended from his prior employer, BFPD officials said. Marty Ryan, BFPD assistant chief, said police department detective Sergeant Scott Warren told him he couldn't go wrong with hiring Garrett. Warren also had completed an extensive background check on Garrett in 2017 and was his polygraph operator. Quote, "Hire him. You will not regret it. And if we had the chance to hire him again, I would be beating the chief's door down, making the same recommendation," Warren said. Another quote, "He has a very good reputation with both his supervisors as well as his peers. He is known as a very dedicated man," Ryan said. "Garrett is a good investigator and a consistently level-headed professional in stressful and challenging conditions."
Sounds like they're getting a good guy.
That does sound like they're getting a good guy.
Definitely, absolutely. Yeah. Also in that edition, there's a story on preemptive measures just in case the levy fails for the Bonner's Ferry School District. So there's a lot of details in it that probably don't translate well to the show. Mm-hmm. But if you are interested in that, we definitely would turn your attention to it and check it out on the BonnersFerryHerald.com. Once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Molly, we're done.
We are done.
We are done for the day. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdalinepress.com, shoshonewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or the bonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher or app, please subscribe to us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out, and give us a like and follow on the North Idaho Now Facebook page so you can see all the fun things we post on there. That's it.
That's it.
That's everything.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Yes. See you guys. Bye.
Bye.